Hi everyone, welcome back to Real Talk with a Sylphie, and it's me again, your girl is Sylphie. Today we're going to touch on a very, very sensitive topic, mental health illnesses among uni students or among the youth. And I'm here with Ami and Joel, and we're going to just touch on it briefly. And so that if you have a friend or if you're going through it, you know what to do, okay? And you know who to call and you know where to ask for help, okay? So, without you know, wasting much time, let's just get into it. So, Ami, Joel, introduce yourselves and then, you know.
Guys, I'm Ishika. I write on mental health related issues, basically depression and suicide, because that's what I can relate so much to. I write a lot on my blog.
And sex.
Yes, but since people love the sex bit, but then that's what I'm more passionate about. Okay. Like, people don't know that, the mental health, because it's okay. A big part of who I am. But so you can visit my blog and then see a couple of the posts about depression and mental health. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So Joel.
Hi guys. My name is Joel. I'm a pharmacist and I love to help people.
Yeah. So he has the science qualified enough to talk to us about, you know, mental health and, you know, the science behind that.
Tell us if you are just exaggerating,
you yes. know. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I'm going to just start shooting. So what is mental health? Okay, what is mental health illness? Sorry. What is mental health illnesses among the youth? What do you think it is? Not even what do you think, but what is it? So I'm going to start with my man, Joel.
Yo. Okay, basically, I mean, two words, mental health.
Okay.
Something that has
illness.
Mental health illness. So something that has got to do with the brain.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, it can manifest in your mood, your thinking, your behavior. So any form of illness that you get to experience that affects any of these three things is a form of mental health illness. Mm-hmm. So you can name it schizophrenia, depression, anxiety, and it goes on and on and on.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Ami.
I think it has to be sanity, mental health illness. You don't feel sane.
Yeah.
Your mind, you are just not who you would be on a normal day.
Okay.
Could be related to how much energy you have to do things, how excited you are, how your mind keeps you from doing what you usually do during the day, being indoors. So it's basically depression, anxiety, anything that like has to do with your mind that keeps you from functioning normally. Yes, it's
okay. So also I checked on the internet and it's saying that mental health illnesses or mental disorders are a wide range of conditions that affect the mood, thinking and behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, all these conditions, that's Ami and Joel have mentioned them: anxiety, depression, schizophrenia, bipolar, and so many other, you know, things. So we're going to go right into this. What are some of the types of mental health illness? I think we've said some of that. I think depression.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which we have
the anxiety, bipolar. The common ones, bipolar, you know.
But then
bipolar is not the most common.
Yeah.
I think anxiety,
eating disorders
is very common.
Disorders.
So I think that's bulimia, yeah. And
acne. What's acne?
No, apnea is like, you know, sleep apnea. When
I know bulimia, they vomit the food, and then some too, they eat a lot, and then some don't eat at all. That's anorexia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so,
and borderline personality disorder.
Okay, is that common?
It's there. Please.
It's there.
We don't. There. I always wish people would talk about it a lot in acrimony.
Okay,
that's what Cookie had. I don't know her, I forgot her name in it.
She switches.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a bit like bipolar, but it's a little different.
Okay. I mean, there are lots of personality
disorders. ADHD, so. Is that mental health disorder?
Yeah, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder.
Wow, please go into that for us. Okay, please. I need you to go into the common ones for me. That's anxiety, depression, bipolar, and then schizophrenia. Are the most common ones.
Yeah.
And multiple personality disorder.
Wow. That's so the most common one.
I'm just saying, it's also
it's also one.
I'll say the medically diagnosed ones most often is the depression, the schizophrenia, and you mentioned one.
Anxiety.
Bipolar disorder.
Okay. So, I mean, you can have unipolar depression and bipolar depression as
I get it.
So I mean, depression, you are depressed, that state of loss of appetite, loss of
and interest,
to take part in activities that you normally feel are very interesting and all of that, and you can have that toggling between the mania being hyper, so that's mania when you have the
bipolar disorder.
Yeah,
like two opposites.
Exactly.
1 minute you're high and the next
And schizophrenia is like just being the high.
That's high. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Wow.
So you'd have a mix based on the particular symptoms the person is showing, you can get to diagnose what exactly. And anxiety, I mean, the worst
worry.
Part, the worry, okay, let me say, yeah. More like you worrying about things over and over again. And the worst part is what these things result in. It's not really about the disease condition.
Okay.
Yeah, it's about the end game.
Okay.
It's either suicide, or in the case of anxiety, you can have someone getting hypertension out of anxiety.
Wow.
I remember one time I interacted with a patient who's had, I mean, he's had, he went through a phase where he lost everything. He got into an accident, lost his job, etc. And I mean, he's got back on his feet now. But whenever he thinks about that, he gets that high.
We're gonna go into personal experiences with mental health, and I will talk about how I had anxiety and how it made me feel. So, on to the next question.
Yeah.
So we know that the common ones that affect people are schizophrenia, anxiety, depression, and personality disorders. And so have we had any personal interaction with, you know, depression or anxiety or any of these mental health illnesses?
I have so many times with depression. I think I've been depressed so many times I can't count. I don't even remember the first time I was depressed, but I think it started, like, I saw it, like, seriously in uni.
Okay.
Because I was away from home, new taste of freedom, and it was just it kept me from going to class, because you wake up and then you have, like, no energy to do anything. I just want to be indoors. I just want to put on sad music and cry. Wow. I don't know what is wrong with me. I can't even explain it to you.
It's a chemical imbalance. You do not have to explain it to anybody.
Yeah. And then sometimes it's like you don't know what triggered it. I just woke up and I don't want to wake up. I don't want to get up. Like, there's just no energy. I'm a hyper person on a normal day.
Yeah.
I have, like, when I'm myself, like, I just wake up, dress up, do something, like, plan, do a whole lot. So when I don't have that energy, it just, it's crippling. It's
sinking and then to your mind.
It doesn't last a day, okay? It just starts the next day. You wake up and then you are, it becomes worse. I used to skip class in school. I think my mates would think I wasn't a serious student or anything. I would just be indoors crying.
Wow.
I wouldn't do anything. I'll just be indoors crying. And then it's like your mind telling you things, telling you you're worthless, reminding you of your flaws, mistakes. Wow. It's crazy. It's just crazy. I hate it. Like, I don't want to go back there. It happens, but then I hate it. I hate how it feels. It can last days, weeks. It will last weeks, and then it scares you because you're like, nah, once it get better, what can I do? And then you, that's when it gets towards the suicidal part, because it's like, I'm not going to get better. What do I do? And then you see death as a way out. Because like, when I die,
the thoughts will stop.
The world, they don't need me. The sun will rise. People will forget me. Like, I could just die and then I won't have to deal with all this. Because like, your own mind is
terrorizing you.
Yes. Like, I don't care what you say. Because so for me, personally, I don't care what people say. I do what I want, because I know if I want to criticize myself, my mind can do that. And it does it so well that it will push me to some place so low that I would want to just die. Like, I'll just think, today or Monday, I'm going to kill myself. I have sat down, Googled the right way to kill yourself before. Gone, like, how each of them won't work. How, I seriously, no, it's like, it's crazy talking about it, but it's really serious.
Yeah.
Getting to that point. And then sometimes you talk to people and then they make you feel like you don't know what you're talking about.
Or you have so much to be grateful for. You don't need to be like that.
And if you know
it's not the person's fault.
If you know me, you know that I'm a hyper person. I can be depressed then. When I get the courage to get up and leave my room and go for lectures and I get there, like, I'm the life of the crowd.
Of course.
I am making jokes. I am talking so loud, and you think I'm okay. So when I later text you and tell you I'm going through it, you won't believe it.
Sounds very difficult.
Because when I'm like, when you're here,
you saw me normal.
Yes, but when I go back, it's like it's waiting for you in your room.
Wow.
And then you go back to that place. It is sick. Please, this is from experience. So if you know me, you won't believe that I get went depressed. Yeah, I meet people and I tell them I get depressed. They tell me, no, I know you. Like, we've been in class for years. I never see you like that. Because you're this hyper person. You know, you always know what you're about. You don't know. Like, it's crazy. Please. Mm-hmm. People, like, it's like the happiest in the crowd, the loudest, usually they go through that. That's from experience. Because me, in a party, like, I'm so loud. But when you see me at that point, you don't recognize me.
I mean, I agree with the part that you said, that people who are, I mean, the life of the party,
they go through it.
I'm not saying everybody though, but me personally, I'm the life of the party.
Yeah, because they need to uphold that face that, I am the strongest one, or I'm the life of the party, or I'm the one who makes people laugh, so I can't be seen this way. And then you go back to your shell.
The toughest when it comes to them, because then, because everybody sees you and they're happy, so you have to put in extra effort.
And everybody comes to you. It's like, I'm going through it. So when I'm going through it and people call me, lately, like, I've gotten so used to it, I know how to cope. So when I'm going through it and you call me and you have an issue, I just let you know that I can't help you now when I feel better. Because if I listen to you, it just pushes me. I will help you though.
Into a darker zone. Yeah, it becomes a trigger.
Yes. So lately, I know how to cope. Like, it's been years. I know how to cope with my whole depression and mental health. But it's just crazy. Yeah.
Thank you, Ami, for
this. It's just crazy.
Yeah. So, Joel, have you had any personal experiences with, you know, mental health yourself?
Personal experiences? I don't know if it's really mental health disorder, but I think it's quite okay for everybody to experience that at a point in their lives.
Mm-hmm.
Like being anxious to talk in public and all that, and it takes a bit of
but then
I've seen a couple of people,
close friends
go through it. And I mean, apart from what I mentioned earlier about the patient who was having anxiety and he was getting blood pressures around 200 and something.
Because he was anxious.
Yeah, he gets anxious when you're about to take his blood pressure.
Wow.
Yes. So if you're about to check his blood pressure, you find him hesitating, sweating.
He has some trauma he has to get rid of.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So beyond that, I've had an experience with a friend who almost committed suicide.
Wow.
Actually, and I mean, it didn't just take me, it took me and
a couple of other friends. I lost a friend to suicide too, so this topic is really on my heart.
Sorry about
honestly.
That.
Honestly.
Sorry. Because I know how hard it'll be for you, because you feel like you could have done something to save them.
Like, actually, he spoke to me about it, you know, but it got to a point where everybody was just minding their business and doing what they have to do. And then now, you feel guilty for not, you know, following up after all that time. And it happens.
So I mean, that was my first deep experience with someone getting depressed and having a lot of suicidal thoughts. So I had to drive all the way from my house in Tesano to somewhere, I won't mention the location, to make sure that she was fine. I mean, the first thing, it just occurred to me that I should talk to my other friends to engage her while I was driving. It wasn't so easy. At first, I thought it was a joke, actually, because that was my first time.
Never.
But then I realized that the thing was getting serious and she wasn't picking my calls. So the next thing was to establish physical contact.
Exactly.
Yeah, because we had been friends. I didn't know her house. I didn't know her siblings. But then we've been friends on Twitter. So yeah, all I did was to ask her where she stays. I mean, to frame it into a conversation.
Yeah.
And when I picked that
look
up
for her.
Yeah, I just had to move. So I got there and apparently she was close to doing it because she had a knife, she had
rope
and all that.
So
I mean I can't really imagine how that felt though if I had ignored it.
You would have blamed yourself
the whole time.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we tried to maintain contact with her for close to the whole day because it was around mid morning, around 10. And we went all the way to Dansuman to take wache and all of that with my other friends. And
you really tried. That's cool.
Yeah, and that's what
from
good
what
friends
you're saying,
should do. Yeah.
What you're saying that the contact. I'm not in a lot of contact with her, but day in, day out, I check in to make sure that
that's
at least
cool.
like someone has her back.
No, that's one mistake I did. Like, I wasn't able to stay in contact like throughout, and I just woke up one day and then,
boom,
he's dead, he's gone, he's committed suicide. I'm like, oh my god.
I think for now you treat it more seriously.
Yeah, of course.
If somebody comes with such a conversation, I would treat it so seriously that they will even get breathing space.
Come on.
You know, because of my experience with it, I don't take it lightly.
Yeah.
I was once with a friend and she got a text message from another friend of ours. She's closer to her. She had pills in her hands, lots of pills, and sent a long message that I am tired. Blah, 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 do this, do that. And she didn't know what to do. I was with her. I was like, madam, get up. We are going to her house right now. Because if she was able to send this is her reaching out.
This is her cry for help.
Yeah, she telling you she's going.
You know, like, I feel like he reached out to me. And I, at that moment, I was able to solve it. But then 6 months later, we're not in contact. So how will he, you know, I was supposed to maintain, make sure he's okay.
Step by step. Sorry,
you know,
about that.
I just felt so terrible.
I get it. It's crazy.
But then personally, I've also had problems with mental health illnesses. I had anxiety, relationship induced anxiety.
Okay.
And I worried so much and I woke up in the evening with panic attacks. You know what happens is that you'll be sleeping and then you wake up and you're breathing heavily, you're breathing fast, too fast, your chest is beating as if it wants to pop out of your chest, as if you are going to have a heart attack or something. It was that serious and I was wondering, like, am I going to die of a heartbreak or something? Whoa. Like, you understand? So it was wild. I had serious anxiety. I couldn't eat.
Oh wow.
I could not eat. No food was, like, literally my parents were begging me to eat food. I couldn't leave the room. My dad used to complain that I'm lazy, but that was not the case.
Understand.
And that
they
was
do not understand.
See,
I was lazy. I'm lazy. I'm not. I'm like, you don't know what's going on. I don't have the strength to do anything in the house. I can't even eat. So why are you? I can't bathe. So what do you want me to do?
Sometimes.
You know, I'm always crying in my room because. Like, I'm afraid to go out and cry and then, you know,
someone sees
somebody and they're asking me what's wrong and I can't really, I can't confide in them. So what next? So you just cry in your zone, stay in your zone, listening to sad songs, overthinking, and it becomes a whole,
you know, then it became depression for you.
When it gets to that point,
yes.
The part where you can't eat
and then
go out
and everything.
Out. like you're losing touch with the reality,
everybody,
and all of that.
I felt sick. I thought I was really sick. I actually felt so sick. I went to the hospital. They really couldn't pinpoint what exactly what was wrong. I knew that it wasn't anything. I was just feeling. Mm-hmm. But then the panic attacks, they were real scary, because you can feel your heart beating fast. Wake up and your breathing has changed. In the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
And you're just panicking.
Were you given like medications or something?
I mean,
did they help?
I didn't tell them that this was what was going on. I just told them I was feeling sick. They gave me blood tonic because my blood was low. My blood count was low.
Mm-hmm.
My eating habit had changed. So, you know, my blood was lacking. And, you know, yeah, so that was my personal encounter with it.
What I picked up from that is actually about the cultural bit as well. You know, mm-hmm. the generational gap.
Mm-hmm.
You have the old people not understanding.
Because
you know, new generations come with new problems. You don't have to like say, "Oh, my generation, this blah blah blah." No, do not do that. You don't know what's happening. Our problems, fine. Our problems are, because everything is faster now, our problems are not the same as yours. So you don't tell us what and what. See, all our life is on, so most of our lives on social media, on, you know, relying on friends and stuff. Mm-hmm. So you can't tell us what is not valid and what's valid. Exactly.
Yeah.
I want to share an experience I had with anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny. I'm dramatic. Okay, so I was sick. I felt sick once, and I overthought, like, I went on Google.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought I was going to die.
I'm going to fight you right now.
I'm serious. Hey, I got really depressed because of that. For weeks, I couldn't go out because I thought I was going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I was depressed because I overthought. I was so scared. Because I googled symptoms, and then I was told
I had a lot of things.
Like cancer, and I'm going to die. And then before the year ends, I'm so serious. At one point, I wasn't going for lectures. I would just be indoors, cover myself, because I thought I was going to die.
Yeah, it happened.
That
like,
happened.
When I started losing the weight like that, because I find it very difficult to lose weight. It's not very difficult, but like, I struggle a bit with my weight. So when I started losing weight just like that,
I scared you.
I was like, what is happening? Is something wasting me? Like, what is making me waste away like this? Yeah. You know, so like, my dad saw me and be like, are you okay? Are you eating? My dad used to say, you're fat. So, you know.
It's good crying that you're losing weight. That's what
he didn't say that it's good I was losing weight. He was worried.
He was worried. Okay, I mean, then that was...
That means, like, I was getting to a zone that, like, it didn't look healthy. The weight loss did not look healthy. That's it. You know, when you're healthy, losing weight, mm-hmm. you're lifting some weights, you look toned.
Yeah.
Now you're looking... Your eyes are gone in.
Yeah,
you're looking sick. So you know.
No, normally when you lose, I mean, as part of the criteria for diagnosing depression,
exactly,
when you lose like less than 5%, I mean, greater than 5% of your weight,
you know that yes,
there's a weight
problem.
Gain too. Mine comes to weight gain because
some people stress.
I mean, yeah,
it.
So
yeah,
I eat.
The eating disorders can come.
Because when you're eating, you can't think. Oh.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you're eating, so
you stuff yourself up.
You
and
just
you
keep
get,
eating. I do that. I just get lots of sweets and all that.
I'm going to talk about the mental health pressure points. When I say pressure points, what's some things that induce mental health illnesses?
Mm-hmm.
So I have here sex does, relationships.
Sex induces.
It depends. Sex.
Rape.
Relationships.
I mean,
that's rape. Yeah.
Maybe two ways.
Two ways.
You know, they are addictive. Behaviors when it comes to under mental health disorders,
okay.
And there's also a bit of trauma,
okay.
So it could be two ways. Maybe one person who wants to constantly indulge in sex, because I mean, whenever you have sex, you have dopamine release,
exactly.
Dopamine is addictive, basically. So that's one bit, and
then an abusive
trauma, yeah. The abusive,
and there are people who try to, like, when they're going through it, they try to have sex, they keep having sex, and then it gets to a point like they try to That's their coping.
That's the sex therapist telling us.
You have sex with somebody. You keep having sex like you're like, you get into.
You know, some people actually regret it.
Yeah, after
you have the sex. The dopamine will be released, but also the regret is there, and that causes like the low, like you feel low, like you feel used, you feel, and then it takes you deeper into the depression because you feel
inadequate. I've been there. Please, it happens.
Of course, it does.
We don't talk about it too. Yeah. See, we love sex and all, but then I think at a point in time, most people feel regret after having sex. It could be based off your beliefs. Growing up, you were told that premarital sex is wrong, and then you are here having sex.
Premarital sex. So what do you think?
And then so in your mind? You are here having
you feel
sex,
inadequate,
doing a whole lot. Yeah. So maybe sometimes you do it for a couple of times, and then one day you wake up and then it hits you. Mm-hmm. What the fuck are you doing? Are we allowed to cut?
Oh, of course.
What the fuck are you doing with your life? And then do you realize this is wrong? Is your mind telling you? Do you realize this is wrong? And who are you? You're like so low to be doing this. You've slept with how many people? You've done this and that. That thing can really beat you up.
Exactly.
Because and then you feel like your self-worth is no longer like
it's gone down
because you've had sex with this number of people. It's based off your beliefs. Because already it's in your mind. You believe in
when the anxiety
things.
Hits in, it becomes a loop. Yes. You worry so much.
Yeah.
Worry so much, then it
and
becomes
then you wonder,
depression.
How will people see me? And then all exactly. this, I think people go through it, but they don't talk about it.
Exactly.
Sex and regret.
That's your term rewards.
And then relationships.
That kind of thing.
That one.
Heartbreaks. Heartbreaks.
Yeah, heartbreaks.
It induces depression. Your self-worth is hit. Is targeted
cheating too?
Cheating,
cheating on the part of the cheater or the cheaty?
Not the person being cheated on because it's like, what don't I have? Doesn't mean that like I wasn't good enough for him, so he had to see somebody else, or maybe it's because of this. Mm-hmm. Maybe he thinks I'm worthless and blah blah.
When you
blah.
Can't get and when you even end on a good note, and you can't, you can't get the person back. Because you don't know why the person does not want you back. Mm-hmm. It becomes like,
you know, that's why sometimes you want
like
closure.
You start thinking so much, like, why doesn't the person want you back? You can't get over this person. You're obsessing over the person, and the person doesn't want you. So then it becomes like a mental, you know, thing. You keep obsessing. And
I think
for
this
me, that's
why
I think it's sorry, but then I think that's why it's very important. I mean, I keep saying that. The friendship phase before the relationship phase is very important.
It doesn't matter.
What I'm saying, okay, in my opinion.
In your opinion, fine.
I'll say just like how maybe when you're quitting a job, you can either decide to quit and leave, or you can decide to have an exit interview based on the relationship that you have with your boss or your co-workers. That's the same thing happening here. If you have a very good relationship, right? Irrespective of whatever the person did, that exit conversation happens.
You know,
it's healthy to have that exit conversation.
Okay.
And it's good to have it at the point where the breakup is happening.
Okay. Like never be friends like, or something.
No, not saying that we need to be friends, but understanding what is
understanding
happening.
Is not I can understand something, but that is not what my feelings are. Yeah. You
I
understand?
Mean, the brain and the
so you know, like I mean I understand that this is X and X, Y, Z is why you don't want to be with me. But I still want to be with you anyway. Regardless, I still have feelings for you. What do I do about that? I obsess about it. I think about it. Why can't we make this work? Blah, blah, blah. And then it becomes a feedback loop. And then my thoughts race. And then, you know, if I don't make steps to get over you, I would actually sink. You understand?
There's this thing that happens too. If you always have people wanting you, and one day you just face someone
rejection.
Doesn't want you, you don't get why they don't want you. Like every other man out there is trying to be with me.
Exactly.
You of all people, like what the fuck don't I have that you want? Like you look within you. What don't I have? Am I not enough?
Exactly.
Everyone wants
exactly.
me, just you.
Exactly.
Also.
Pressure points. Examples are how parents also pressure their children. be this, be that. They do not want them to go after their dreams and their passion. So everything, when they go after what they want, then they are unhappy. So that's one of the pressure points. Unhappiness from work, mm-hmm. from the field one chose or something.
That personal fulfillment.
That personal fulfillment. And then the last thing that is, there's chemical imbalances. That's, there's no logical reason. So there's nothing logical about mental health illnesses sometimes. It's just a chemical imbalance. And you need to let the person go to
a therapist,
a psychologist, somebody who can help.
I think ones, they talk to you and you realize that they have no... Like, after listening to everything, you just don't know what you're getting.
Exactly. Like,
there's absolutely no reason why they should feel that way, but they feel that way.
Exactly.
I'll put that actually under unidentified causes.
Because mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I feel like anytime I get depressed, that's how it is. Like, you just cannot pinpoint. It's not like someone broke my heart. Like, dude, that won't happen.
Yeah.
That won't push me to that point. You just wake up and...
boom, it's there.
So it's like, where did
you don't feel
from?
Worthy, and you don't feel like socializing, you just want to be in your corner, you cry a lot.
I think those are the scariest.
Like, they're sad for no reason.
Something I don't understand is
scary. It's scary.
Yeah, and the bit of medications and recreational drugs as well. There's a possibility.
It causes it?
Yeah, for mental health disorders.
Whoa, so like what?
Someone
like alcohol?
Someone might do weed, the person is fine, right? Another person does weed and then boom, the person is on the street.
Yeah, I feel people.
And it's sometimes because of, I mean, genetics, your family history. If you have a family history of
madness,
then there's a higher chance that if you take any recreational drug, not just weed,
with
cocaine
away.
Or anything, it will take you there. Okay, it will take you there. So you just have to try.
I feel like with schizophrenia, right? All the types of mental health disorders or illnesses can lead you there,
mm-hmm.
if it becomes too much, because heartbreaks have made people go mad,
mm-hmm.
depression has made people go mad,
mm-hmm.
they start seeing things, and so pinning it on recreational drugs is not so fair. It depends on the drug, you understand that. It's not so fair, maybe say alcohol or say weed or to say, you know.
There could be a coping mechanism for them.
Yes. All I'm actually saying is that even if you go from a health care mm-hmm. professional's perspective, if you come to a healthcare practitioner mm-hmm. and he has to manage your depression,
they will give you some drugs.
First of all, they'll tell you to go off all substances if you are using anything recreationally or not. They'll tell you to go off because it's like you have to get a baseline.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then even the antidepressant itself can lead to
depression.
Yeah.
Wow.
The side effects of an antidepressant.
Because they can make you really hyper to a point that
you need it. You depend on it.
And the way
but
you no longer
I feel
have
like
it.
With I mean, you said it can be used as a coping mechanism. That's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
That's a big
because
mistake.
Because you keep going. It's just like the sex bit.
Mm-hmm. You know, these alcohol and weed are gateway drugs. They don't necessarily cause so much harm. Unless, like, overdosed. But alcohol and the gateway drugs lead you to narcotics. Slowly. Like, I mean, if you overdo it, you understand? So you are not getting... Now, you're using it as a coping mechanism. Every time you feel sad, you go,
mm-hmm.
you take alcohol or you take weed. And then it goes on and on. And then you can't feel... Now when you take alcohol and you don't feel it, any happiness. You need it to go a step higher. Now, what are you going to do? You're going to go a step higher to the cocaine, the heroin, the... cigarette mixed with things, mm-hmm. you know, just to get that happy feel. I just want to be happy. Then because of you just want to be happy, you're moving on. So using it as a coping mechanism is a mistake. Use recreational drugs as recreational drugs when you are not feeling mm-hmm. any type of way. You understand?
I have something to say about using alcohol too.
Yeah.
You know, when you drink, it can happen that I use alcohol as a coping mechanism. Mm-hmm. It's not that bad. I still do it for my own reasons. You can get drunk and then you know we do lots of hasty things when we are drunk, impulsive things.
It makes it so bad.
You will end up doing something because you got so drunk.
Mm-hmm.
You are no longer depressed. You're finally excited that you have so much energy to do something.
Mm-hmm.
And you end up maybe having reckless sex.
Yeah.
Doing something. Spending you wake too up much and then money.
You feel worse.
And you wake up and you're remembering, oh God, did I just do that? And then your mind is telling you, see, it's because you are mad already. You are useless.
And it pushes you down.
You don't know how to use money. You don't know how to do this.
You don't know how to control your alcohol.
You are a whore, blah, blah, blah. You were able to sleep with this random person because you got so drunk.
Mm-hmm.
That pushes you somewhere farther than where you
are. So I feel like with substances, never use it to cope. Use it recreationally as you want to. Like, maybe if it's recreational, we are all hanging out. Yeah, we are drinking wine. That's cool. Not when I'm sad, I'm drinking wine. That's a mistake.
Please,
it makes it worse.
And everybody has their tolerance level anyway.
Exactly.
For mental health, there's a lot of individualism when it comes to therapy and all of that.
Yeah.
Someone might be taking 80 milligrams of a drug. You would need 40 milligrams.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And even beyond this, why we, as a medical professional, like as a pharmacist, I'm not going to tell you to go with recreational drug as a coping mechanism, is the fact that even with the antidepressants, there's a way to taper it. There's a way to graduate the doses. You even graduate the doses in two weeks intervals. Okay. So you can imagine, if maybe you are using a cigarette, are you going to say you're going to increase
graduate the cigarette? Yeah, you
it's
understand.
Not really standardized.
So it's going to introduce you to a different, like, exactly. You'd want to be over, and there are, like, you know, apparently weed can give you psychosis, can induce psychosis if you overdose it.
Yeah, and especially if you have
if you're hallucinating like that, exactly. Yeah, if you're hallucinating, it would not be amusing at all.
Yeah, exactly. So the dynamics are a lot. From a healthcare professional's perspective, what I'll tell you is that whenever you're going through these things, you'd have to get a baseline.
Yeah.
And you have to get off anything that is going to alter the chemical composition of the brain.
Exactly.
Because
you have to go through it the right way.
Yeah, alcohol, weed, I mean, they will increase dopamine levels. Just I wouldn't increase it as much as cocaine will.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why you'd have more addiction tendencies with cocaine and more excitement with it.
Mm-hmm.
So based on the dynamics, you'd want to sweep off and then start gradually on something that's more standardized.
Exactly.
Now, when you get off, I mean, you're fine. Whatever you want to do depends on you. But then the whole idea is to make sure that you're actually going to get out of that pit.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
You know, sometimes you might feel that way, maybe depressed, and then you have so much work to do.
Mm-hmm.
Time waits for no man. Maybe you're a student, you have an exam to write tomorrow, you have a work assignment to turn in, and you know that if you have to wait, it will actually do you no good. You could lose your job, you could fail an exam that you need to pass. So that moment, you resort to the recreational drug. Because I need to write my paper. I'm trying to be, like, steady. I'm trying to finish my work assignment. So I get the drink, because when I get the drink, it will help me forget what I was thinking about for tonight. So after I'm done with whatever I'm dealing with, like the project I'm working on, then I can deal with.
Do you really?
As an adult, I have a work assignment. Right, this is me talking about, like, what
that's
I do with now.
Right?
I have a work assignment. I have things doing tomorrow that will not waste for me. If I don't finish it today, no one will do it for me.
Okay.
How am I going to explain myself to my boss?
See,
I'm missing an IE and exams. You need to write that paper. So that moment, you find a way, like, temporary. I don't care how long this will last. I need to write my paper. So I get a drink, or I do the drugs. I would get a drink. Me, personally, I would get a drink. Get something that will take away whatever thoughts I'm having so that I can deal with.
Can focus.
Mm-hmm.
And focus. When I'm done with it and it comes, okay, this time I'm free. I have the time to deal with it. Now I can deal with you now.
Well, I don't.